If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
For us, it was all about making the calls. It was all about taking rejection, right? You get a lot of no's. Sometimes you get angry people on the phone that just don't want to talk to you. You got to be able to brush all that off and keep plowing forward until you start getting some traction and some momentum building.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Dave Spooner is a co-founder of Inago, a property management software designed to simplify life for small to mid-sized landlords. He's been involved in the real estate technology space for the last 7 years, working to enhance the way landlords and tenants communicate. In addition to his experience in content marketing, Dave utilizes his experience with entrepreneurship and management to help landlords achieve sustained success. Dave, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks a bunch for having me, Sam. Happy to be here.
Yeah, this is great, man. I love it when we get to bring industry partners on, because obviously we can talk all day, you know, from the investor or from, you know, the operator side of things. But there are a lot of back-end partners, such as folks like yourself, that it requires for us to be able to do what we do.
Right.
I want to dive in, find out why you guys have founded Inago, what you guys do, the problems in the industry that you guys are looking to solve, and really how we, as you know, active investors can interface with you guys.
Yeah, that sounds great.
So floor is yours, man. Take it away. What can you tell us? What can you tell us about what you guys do?
Yeah, sure. So Inago, like you mentioned in the intro, is rental management software. We're designed typically for small to mid-sized landlords. I got involved in the space actually right out of school. So I went to Miami University here in Ohio, Oxford, Ohio. And while I was there, me and a buddy, you know, in Miami, like a lot of college universities, the housing situation is a total nightmare for students, right? The landlords have this iron grip on housing. So they're not too interested in advertising in traditional ways or kind of updating a lot of their methodologies. So it's hard to find a place to rent. And, you know, it's hard to get people together to sign leases and all that stuff. So initially, we wanted to build a software package that would provide tenants those tools. And we kind of roped it in with some back-end tools for the landlord side. And we worked on that for a few years. And ultimately, we just determined that that landlords weren't that interested. They just, you know, they didn't care about advertising. They weren't going to pay for advertising. They had 99% occupancy across the country. They just weren't going to do it no matter how many times we called them up. But in speaking to all those landlords over those couple of years, we kept hearing the same feedback over and over again. We don't care about advertising, but we have really rudimentary tools to manage our properties, collecting rent, signing leases, all that stuff. So after a little while, it finally got through to us and we said, maybe we're barking up the wrong tree here. Maybe we should take a different approach. And that company didn't work out. We shut that one down, but me and one other guy that was involved in that split off, and we're the ones that started Inago back in 2017. And it was from that kernel, that nugget that we learned from the initial attempt that we made right out of school to build a listing platform for landlords that Inago was kind of born.
That's interesting. So give us the bells and whistles of Inago. What does it do? I understand you say it's a listing platform, but what kind of give us the ins and outs on it?
Yeah. So Inago is not so much the listing element anymore. We do listing syndication, but it's really about the property management tools. And with that, you get the traditional set of tools like collecting rent online and recording payments and managing your tenants and leases, signing documents online, screening tenants. Some of the differences with our system, there's really primarily two, I would say. One is that we're free to use. We don't cost a dime. And we have landlords that have a single unit. We have landlords that have 2,000 units. And they're all using the same platform, and it's all free to use. So it's a really robust platform that is still, you know, doesn't cost anything to start using. The second thing is that we built Inago in such a way to be flexible to work with this wide variety of landlords. So there's tooling in there for commercial landlords. There's tooling in there for people that own a bunch of HOAs or manage a bunch of HOAs. There's tooling in there for student housing. It's all under one roof. It's all seamlessly integrated. It's all simple to interact with so that even if you just have one unit and you manage it on the weekends or it's a full-time gig where you have a fleet of maintenance staff, you're still using the same platform. And that was really the approach that we took that was a little bit different than what we had seen in the industry up to that point.
Right, right. Was it a challenge? Let's talk about the build out side of this. Was it a challenge? You know, obviously, because each of those different industries have their own special kind of needs. You know, commercial office space may have a different need than multifamily, that may have a different need than, you know, light industrial or something else. Can this, well, let's ask the first question. Can it span all of those asset classes?
Yeah, it does. So our focus is really on the tenant management piece of things. So we try to boil it down to the most common denominator anywhere we can. It is a huge challenge. That's the biggest challenge that we face, is we have to go through things again and again and again and say, okay, how's this going to work with commercial? How's this going to work with HOAs? How's this going to work with student housing? And make sure all of it is compatible together. But we always try to boil it down, like I said, to the least common denominator, which is all about tenant management. It's about communicating with the tenants. It's about interacting with the tenants. We're not as focused on the assets themselves. We're not handling depreciation for you. We're not handling your internal rate of returns. We're not doing those types of analysis for you. We're doing the day-to-day stuff. We're doing the interactions with the tenants. And we, you know, I think we do that really effectively. And that fortunately works across a lot of different asset classes, because ultimately it's the same types of jobs that you're doing.
Right, right. I mean, at the end of the day, we own a piece of land that has a building on it that someone pays to occupy.
Right, exactly.
And yeah, I don't care what asset class that is. I mean, that's the summary of it. And so you guys said, look, we can streamline this process between, or at least the communication side between the tenant and landlord.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating.
Exactly.
That's really fascinating. I like this conversation about building a company, because these are things that translate across not just your product, but, you know, even to us as active investors. What was the building the company side of things like? So let's say you come up with the idea, you know, your first company, you shut the doors on, you said, you know, this, we're kind of barking up the wrong tree. We're going to retool and do something else. Who was the first customer you got? How did you land that client? Like, talk to us that build outside, because software development is different than active investors, you know, buying real estate is, but I think there's some similarities. So I'd love to kind of hear your struggle to growth.
There's definitely some similarities. And I'd say the overlap is largest in the initial phases. So obviously if you're in real estate, there's a lot more boots on the ground, right? There's a lot more handshake meetings than you do if you're growing a software company traditionally. But when you're first starting that software company, it's the exact same thing. I mean, I was meeting in coffee shops with local landlords. I was just trying to convince them to give our system a shot. It was a lot of that. It was a lot of cold calling. It was a lot of cold emailing. We're fortunate now that it's mostly people coming to us. We're not really reaching out to people. They're coming our way. They're finding us online. But it was a lot of that in the beginning stages. And, you know, that's a hard transition to make, I think. It's a hard thing for somebody that's intending to start a software company to realize the effort that it takes and the type of effort it takes to get it off the ground. And I would imagine, again, it's the exact same thing. When you don't have your network built out in real estate, you got to go build your network. And that's not very easy to do. So for us, it was all about making the calls. It was all about taking rejection, right? You get a lot of no's. Sometimes you get angry people on the phone that just don't want to talk to you. You got to be able to brush all that off and keep plowing forward until you start getting some traction and some momentum building.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So at what point in time did you finally rest and say, like, okay, hey, the machine, we've got the engine started, it's running, you know, we're doing something here, versus like the, oh crap, I hope this thing actually fires up and you know, we make a go of it?
Yeah. I don't know that you ever leave that, right? I think it's always kind of there to some degree. It's just the machine is now headed in different directions that require different types of effort, right?
Right. Now you got a bigger steering wheel.
Right, exactly. I think I would say when we really in earnest made the shift from cold calling, because cold calling was in the beginning, even when we had some employees, was an essential piece of our growth strategy. It had to be. People weren't finding us, right? But we were building out our SEO strategy, search engine optimization. We were building out our paid digital ad strategy. And when we finally made that transition, which was probably, I don't know, in mid to late 2018, where the focus really went full bore into the digital strategy instead of cold calling, that's probably when we realized, okay, this seems like it's got enough momentum here. There's enough life in this where it's going to keep growing as long as we just keep feeding it.
Right, right. How many team members did you have on board? You know, because obviously in the early stages, your expenses outweigh your income, you know, almost always. So how many people did you have come on board that were kind of like, I mean, maybe you didn't do it this way, but I'm imagining there's people working for peanuts in the early stages.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Big time. So yeah, that's a great question. So When we first started, it was just two of us. It was me and my co-founder, Yasser Drabu, and he's the CTO, and he's really the brains behind the whole operation. He's the one that built a lot of the initial stuff from scratch. And then what we initially did to try to get things running is we actually started an internship program. So we knew we didn't have any money to pay anybody. And we also knew that we didn't totally know how we needed to manage people, right? Hiring somebody, even if you do have the money, is an expensive thing to do with a lot of risk, right? So we wanted to experiment with that process and get a feel for what does onboarding look like? What kind of production can we expect to get out of these people? What types of characteristics are we looking for that are going to be most effective in whatever role they're filling? So we did three internship programs. Each one was only a few months long, where we had 2 to 3 interns working for us for, like you said, peanuts. And we actually hired our first person out of one of those internship programs, but he's the one that took the biggest risk. He was a consultant, pretty successful, very successful, really. And he wanted a shift. He liked what we were doing. He wanted to get involved. And we were like, look, man, we can pay you intern money. That's all we got. So he took us up on it. He was an intern for a few months. He did an awesome job. And he was our first full-time hire. His name's Tom Gersitar, and he's still with us. He does a great job.
Right, right. I think that's a great strategy, you know, out of the gate. If you're an early startup, you know, interns, I mean, and what great exposure, I mean, for both sides. Because you guys get to deal with the, you know, refining your processes, refining your, like you said, onboarding. I mean, those are things, I doubt you had an onboarding manual or onboarding process in writing prior.
Certainly
to.
Certainly not.
Yeah, prior to having somebody come along and you're like, oh, hey, by the way, you're not working for me. And they're going, wait, what do I do again? And you're like, oh, I guess I got to figure that out, don't I? Because I think that's also a challenge. Like, it's great to have more staff, but then you got to figure out exactly what it is they're doing all the time. So I think that was an inexpensive, you know, and that's a key point, you know, and that's good for interns too, because they get to come on and see, you know, the ugly stages of startup and what it takes to get something launched. So that's really cool. And to boot, you brought somebody on board that's still with you today. So
yeah, exactly.
That's fantastic. How do you guys compete? Because, you know, Inago is not the only person competing in this space. So I think you've got you guys, you've got Cozy, you've got Turbo Tenant, you've got a lot of people that are, you know, fighting for their own share of the pie. What do you guys do that's different maybe than what they do? You know, and again, I know what you offer to us as owners is free, which is amazing. So thanks for that. I know that there's a way to monetize that one way or another. If you're free, you are the product, which is okay. I mean, that's cool. But how do you guys differentiate yourself from Cozy and from some of the other platforms out there?
Yeah, there's a ton of little things, right? I could go on for hours on all the little things that are different. I'd say the big thing, though, is really just a shift in perspective. We follow a product-driven growth strategy rather than a marketing-driven growth strategy. Okay, so most of our dollars are spent on customer service, making sure our customers are as happy as possible, and investing in our product. We spend very, very little, a fraction, a tiny sliver of our budget on marketing. Hmm. And our marketing team is definitely the smallest. We're big believers in software, and if you build it, they will come, right? And I think that shows. I mean, I don't want to, you know, sit here and rag on anybody else, but I do think if you look at some of those competitors, you'll see that the flexibility, the depth of features that are included in Inago are pretty significantly different, especially even in the last 3 months, the changes that we've made versus the changes that somebody else has made, because we're constantly investing in our product. We're constantly building on top of that. So overall, that just, you know, builds upon itself and becomes a bigger and bigger gap as we go forward.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. And I think some of the, maybe one of the more core focuses of the other platforms, they're more geared towards single family.
That's definitely true.
Yeah. Yeah. And so obviously the name of this show is How to Scale Commercial Real Estate. So as we look at bigger and bigger assets and kind of taking this full circle back to the beginning of our conversation, how you guys have built it more for, you know, somebody owns a building and you have to have somebody that pays you that uses that building for whatever it is, living, work, whatever it is, they're writing you a check and you want to interface, you know, solve that communication problem between those two. But let's talk about, say, larger, let's use multifamily as an example. I mean, there's also some large, robust platforms on the multifamily management side, and it seems like you've found a way to solve, you know, some of the problems maybe they've had. You know, if you own 2,000 units, that's a lot of units to manage off of, you know, off of a platform. So talk to us about some of the bells and whistles on that side of things. I'd love to really kind of hear how that works.
Well, yeah, again, I think it it comes down to that product-driven mindset, because and trying to service a wide variety of people in a useful way, and not ever forgetting about the stakeholders, right? The individuals that are kind of on the other end of things. So just one as an example, when you first log into an Inago account, you will not have a feature enabled that's called user management, but you can easily do so in the settings page, right? So for somebody that comes in that just owns a property, they may run the show themselves. Even if they own, we have landlords that have 100 properties and run the show themselves, which is crazy to me, but hey, if you can do it, right? But then we have other landlords, like I said, that have 2,000 units. They have 20 people that work below them, right? So they go into their settings and it'll guide them there depending on some of their behavior. But they go into their settings and they turn on user setup. Now all of a sudden they have this new feature, this new page available to them where they can add users and they can control permissions. They can say, this is a maintenance guy. He's got access to these three buildings and we're going to forward him automatically all of the maintenance issues that are related to electricity, right? He's an electrician that works for us, or all the issues that are related to the HVAC system or whatever it is, right? It's all automated. It's taken care of. It's all sent off. And you're controlling what they can see and what they can do. You can do that same thing to add owners if you're a property manager. You can add property managers. You can create custom roles. So that one feature, which again, isn't kind of diluting the product for the people that don't need it, but once turned on has this vast array of options for the users that do need it. That one feature can service all those different people in all those varieties of different industries because of the way it's built out.
Right. That's super cool. What are some things, I know you guys have been a company that's grown very quickly. What are some things, if you could rewind the tape, what are some things that maybe you would have done differently?
That's a great question. I would say, I think one of the hardest things to do in software, and you know, I wonder how this relates to real estate. I'm sure you'll be able to connect the two. But in software, at the very least, there's something called feature creep, right? Where people are constantly asking for things and you always want to say yes, which especially because we're trying to service this wide variety of people, definitely adds more, you know, desire to do that. So I would say early on, we probably could have had a more defined path forward for some of the features that we deem to be most important most immediately. And ultimately, I think we've gotten there, but it certainly took us longer than it could have. So just really having a clear path forward, and maybe the relation in real estate is that to just sit down and plan that out, think ahead, sharpen the axe before you start chopping the tree, right? Really make sure you've got a clear path forward and stick to that, even when there's other, you know, other ideas kind of coming at you.
Right. Well, in real estate, I think it would be the shiny object syndrome. It's that constant like, oh, I could do this. Oh, I could do that. And for you guys, maybe it was features. It's like, oh man, but I really like self-storage, but man, hey, look at this over here. Multifamily is really cool. And the next thing you know, it's like a dozen bottle rockets without any tails on them. Like you're all over the place.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And I think everybody kind of goes through that, but I think, you know, refining your focus is your point there that like, hey, you know what, obviously, you know, users are coming to you with all these ideas and maybe things you guys could implement or you couldn't. And you're like, hey, we'll try that. That's a good idea. And in the end, maybe it only services one or two users or, you know, it's just not a really refined process. I like your phrase there of, you know, sharpen the axe before you chop the tree. So that's really cool. What else should we talk about here, Dave? I know there's some questions I probably haven't asked. I mean, I'd love to hear if you've got any other thoughts on your product or on, you know, how you guys interface, you know, anything else you'd like to share on this?
I just encourage people to check it out and it's free to use. So there's no harm in signing up and taking a look around and seeing what we offer. We do offer phone support as well, which is kind of unique in our industry. So people can call us up. If they want a demo, we'll give them a demo. You know, if they want, to join one of our webinars, they can join one of our webinars. So we always encourage people, just check it out, find out for yourself, find out if Inago is different, if we're actually practicing what we preach, and I think they'll be happy with what they see.
Right. No, absolutely. Why not? That's, yeah, what do you got to lose? A few minutes of your time. I do have one question for you. Here's something I've seen with some competing platforms is the speed of money. It's not a big deal when you have one house, two houses, maybe even five. But what I have seen on some of these platforms is that, you know, your tenant may pay on the 24th and then it shows up in your, in the landlord's account on the 1st or the 2nd. So there's a, you know, 5 to 9 day float time that, you know, that you have on that. So what's your guys' speed of money? Like how fast between when a tenant pays and when the landlord actually receives the money in their account?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this because I have a good answer for you. We're pretty darn fast. I believe we're just about the fastest out there. So we move the money after a single business day. So if somebody pays on a Monday, for example, the funds are going to be held for one day, Tuesday, and then they're in the landlord's account by Wednesday morning. So right. It's really, really quick. Now, the only exceptions to that are obviously non-business days. So like if somebody does pay on a Friday, it can extend that a little bit. No, there's no getting around that. That's the bank's issue.
Right.
And also the first time a tenant pays, we hold it for a standard ACH hold time, which is 3 days. But after that first successful payment, we accelerate every payment from that same tenant and make sure it gets in your account after just a single business day hold.
Right, right. No, that's key. That's great. And that's a big differentiator because I understand that, money's made on the float. But, I was just curious, especially as you get into larger assets. Again, on the small scale, it doesn't really matter that much. But if you've got 2,000 doors and you're waiting 6 extra days for payments on 2,000 doors, that becomes expensive money very fast. So that's really cool. Awesome, man. Dave, hey, let's jump into your final four if we can. And this may, you can take these questions and tweak them any way you want, but I'll give you the same final four, give everybody else, and we'll see where you take it. The first question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
To an aspiring investor, I would say that the best advice that I could give and the best advice that I got is to really surround yourself with a great team, to find good people that work around you, to put a lot of effort, just kind of like we did with the internship program. Refine that process, figure out what works best, and then redo it over and over again. Find the best people to be around you.
Right, right. I love that. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
One thing I'm currently doing, I do a lot of reading. I read a lot of books. I read a lot of blogs online, just try to learn about different movement in the industry and other industries, try to get myself exposure to a lot of different things. So I'm a big reader.
That's awesome. That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what is one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Well, we're trying to build great software that everybody will be happy using. That's certainly one thing. Trying to build a team that's really happy with their jobs and with their work, that has a nice work-life balance, that isn't overworked. Yeah, just trying to build a great company here.
Right, right. No, that's huge. And I once in a while I get that answer, and I think it's an overlooked answer, which is that providing quality employment, with happy employees that love where they work, man. That's a harder thing to do than I think people recognize. But if you have 10 or 20 or 50 employees that all go home and say, "Man, I love working at Inago," like, that's amazing. It's a job well done. So that's awesome. Dave, how do we get in touch with you?
I always like to give out my email whenever I do a podcast. It's dave@inago.com. It's about as simple as it can get. Anybody can reach out to me directly. I will get back to you if you have any questions. You can also find us online, inago.com. We're on all the social channels. Pretty easy to locate there. And like I said, we offer phone support, so give us a ring if you have questions about us.
That's awesome. And Inago is spelled INNAGO. For those of you driving down the road in your cars, you're going, "How do you spell Inago?" INNAGO. Dave, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it. You have a great day.
Yeah, you too, Sam. Thanks a bunch.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.